Hare Krishna. Can we continue reading? The Lord, page number 120. The Lord fully maintains His unalloyed devotees, and He guides them progressively on the path towards devotional perfection. As a leader of His devotees, He ultimately awards the desired results of devotional service by giving Himself to them. The devotees of the Lord see the Lord eye to eye by His causeless mercy. But the Lord helps His devotees reach the supermost spiritual planet, Golok Vrindavan. Being the creator, He can bestow all necessary qualifications upon His devotees so that they can ultimately reach Him. The Lord is the cause of all causes. In other words, since there is nothing that caused Him, He is the original cause. Consequently, He enjoys His own self by manifesting His own internal potency. The external potency is not exactly manifested by Him, for He expands Himself as the Purushas, and it is in these forms that He maintains the features of the material manifestations. By such expansions, He creates, maintains, and annihilates the cosmic manifestation.
Yeah, continue.
The living entities are also differentiated expansions of the Lord's Self. And because some of them desire to be lords and imitate the Supreme Lord, He allows them to enter into the cosmic creation with the option to fully utilize their propensity to lord it over nature. Because of the presence of His parts and parcels, the living entities, the entire phenomenal world is stirred into action and reaction. So the living entities are given full facilities to lord over material nature. But the ultimate controller is the Lord Himself in His plenary features as a Paramatma, the Super Soul, who is one of the Purushas. Thus, there is a gulf of difference between the living entity, Atma, and the controlling Lord Paramatma, the Soul and the Super Soul. Paramatma is the controller and Atma is the controlled. Therefore, they are in different categories. Because the Paramatma fully cooperates with the Atma, he is known as the constant companion of the living being. The all-pervading feature of the Lord.
So now here, just a minute, the last two paragraphs, Prabhupada talked about the soham. So how, so yo asau, so, what is that last line? Yo asau, asau purusha, soham asmi. So, now soham is a favorite phrase for the impersonalists, the Mayavadis. Now, so is actually the form of the word saha. Saha means he or that. Aham is I. Soham. So now this does not mean that I am he. If I am he was there, then there's no need to mention the duality. Soham. So I am of the same nature as he. I am he. That is there, the duality is there. If there is a realization, if there is real, like Prabhupada follows Ramanujacharya in refuting Mayavad in the 2.12 purport. 2.12 is Natvevaham Jatunasam. So in that purport, Lord Krishna is telling that you, I, and all these kings have existed in the past, are existing now, and will continue to exist in the future. So now, the impersonalists argue that this is actually, this statement is made at Vyavaharikvad. You know, the duality is at the Vyavaharik level. But he says that before this verse itself is what? Ashochyanam Ashochastvam. That means Krishna has condemned Arjuna for being at the level of bodily level, at the ignorant level. So immediately after condemning that, why will Krishna speak at the bodily level? And if you see the next verse, Krishna is talking at the spiritual level. Dehinosmi yatha dehe. So, he says that actually, if Krishna is talking at the bodily level, if Krishna is seeing duality and Krishna is showing duality, to Arjuna. Now duality means basically I and you, dual two. So you know, I, you, they, this conception is not there in impersonalism, in Maya one, and only one thing that exists. So now he argues, if Krishna is showing duality to Arjuna, that means Krishna is seeing duality. If Krishna is seeing duality, then is Krishna enlightened or not? If Krishna is not enlightened, then his words are not worth hearing. Isn't it? If Krishna is not enlightened, then what is the use of hearing from him? Because he is also a deluded soul like the rest of us. But if Krishna is enlightened, then Krishna is not seeing duality. Then he will not speak this verse. So actually, you know, if you take their argument itself, there can be no contact between the Vyavaharic and the Paramarthic level. Because at the Paramarthic level, the Vyavaharic doesn't exist only. So if there is, so they say that, that Brahman descends down from the Paramarthic to the Vyavaharic level to enlighten us. But for whatever is there at the Paramarthic level, the Vyavaharic doesn't exist only. Is this point clear? There can be no contact between these two levels. If we are at the Vyavaharic level, we cannot pursue the Paramarthic level. Why? Because we are an illusion. And when we are in the Paramarthic level, Vyavaharic doesn't exist. And there is no illusion to make us think that it exists. So these are completely exclusive, with no contact between them. And therefore, the philosophy falls. If our Krishna is at that level, then he will not be seeing duality. If Krishna is at this level, then he cannot take us there. And he said Krishna has come from that level to this level, then it's not possible like that, because at that level, this level doesn't exist. Therefore, Ramacharya thoroughly refutes that. That one verse is devastating. And the Advaitins have tried so much to try to come up with this and that, but Vedanta Deshika takes that and thoroughly refutes all their arguments again when he does that. So Prabhupada basically follows Ramacharya in that purport. So if you say so hum, I am that, and still I and that, the duality is there. If I am talking at the Vyavaharic level, then actually the duality is there and I have not realized the oneness. If I have realized the oneness, then I will not see the duality. So when we try to segregate scripture into the Vyavaharic and the Paramarthic level, the problem comes that on what basis are we segregating it? Because as I was saying earlier, Vedanta Deshika asked this question, is scripture itself at the Vyavaharic level or at the Paramarthic level? You know, if you try to segregate scripture, then at what position are you to segregate scripture? It leads to this two level classification. If it is accepted, then Mayavad becomes undefeatable. Almost undefeatable. Because whatever Praman we give, you will say that is Vyavaharic. But the postulate, the foundation of the two level division itself is very shaky. What are the problems with it? First is that, you know, we discussed where is it given in the scripture. Second is that, just now we mentioned, that the two are completely disconnected and they can never be connected. Third is that, is the Shastra itself at Vyavaharic or Paramarthic? Means the Shastric speaker, is he at this level or that level? Is he oscillating? Means some verses are speaking here, some verses are speaking there. At work, if Krishna, he cannot be partially enlightened and partially deluded. No, there is no such path. Either there is enlightenment or there is delusion. So, the status of Shastra, the status of speaker of Shastra is very, very ambiguous. And that's why the best way to attack, if ever we meet people who are in Mayavadis like this, the best way to attack is to attack the foundation itself. So, that's why now Prabhupada is explaining this purport, how actually we are one in quality, like the sunrise and the sun. But the soham does not mean that I am one with that Lord in entirety. Because if I am one with that Lord, then there won't be an I to say that I am one with you. There would be no such existence, only separately being there. Therefore, soham means that we are one in quality, not one in entirety with the Lord. Yes, Prabhu, Mike? Yeah.
Just like we say, this Uttama Bhagavat, he sees everyone as servant of Krishna. But to preach, he comes down to the level of Madhyama. So they may also argue something like that, that yes, Krishna is on Paramarthic level, but to instruct us, He has come to Vyavaharic level and now he is giving this knowledge.
Okay. See, this question is very reasonable, but actually this question comes from a not understanding what Mayavad is proposing. When we take a talk about a Uttamadhikari coming down to a Madhyam level. Now, according to our philosophy, according to Vaishnava philosophy, which is the actual scriptural conclusion, the world is also real. The material world is real, spiritual world is real. So, there is the spiritual world as a reality, the highest reality, the eternal reality. The material world is also a reality, a temporary reality. Therefore, we can move from one reality to another reality. But when we talk about the impersonal realization, Brahman is the only reality. Brahma Satya Jagan Mithya. So we can move from one reality to another reality, but we can not move from reality to illusion. So there's a difference. That's why our Vaishnavacharyas insist that this world is real. When they say this world is illusion, then there's no question of coming down from there to here. That point clear? Yeah.
They have the concept of Jivan Mukta. Like, they where they are, Vyavaharik or Paramarthik, or they are oscillating also.
They themselves are confused about it. Because that's why when Shankaracharya talks, his question is, where are the Jivan Mukta? That's why when Shankaracharya talks about bhakti, and it's not that he occasionally talks about bhakti, profusely talks about bhakti. When he talks about his bhakti, they consider Shankaracharya to be enlightened, obviously, he is liberated. But then he is glorifying bhakti. So that is that when he sings Bhaja Govinda prayers or something like that, they say that actually this is somehow he has become overwhelmed with bhakti and has forgotten the truth because of bhakti bhav. So, you know, they are themselves confused about the position of their acharya. That's why, you know, in Gudartha Dipika, Madhusudan Saraswati, what he does is in the beginning he glorifies Krishna. I know no one except that beautiful Lord Krishna. But you know, he's after all right, is in the Mayavad Sampradaya, and he's writing commentary over there. So inside his writings, he talks about, he tries to analyze Bhagavata impersonally. So what they say is, his invocation when he's doing, he's a bhakta, and that time he has become overwhelmed by bhakti, and actually later on when he's speaking, he's in gyan. So it's a, he's actually enlightened. So they are themselves confused. But it's there's in their philosophy, the status of the Jivan Mukta is very, very ambiguous. So according to them, somehow one can be in the reality and at the same time pursue the illusion. But that's not possible. If I'm in reality, I cannot perceive illusion. Because when there is a reality, there is no illusion existing at all. So that's why it's a very problematic explanation how this Jivan Mukta takes place. Yes, Chaitanya Chandra.
Is that Krishna says that now they are dual, you and the kings, previously they are duality exists, and in future also it will exist.
Correct.
So then we can defeat them on this basis that how can then Paramarthik status exist at all, because duality will be eternally.
Yes, that's what Prabhupada uses argument 3 ways. Very good argument. He's saying the future also Krishna is saying that they will continue to exist, I, you and all these kings will continue to exist in the future also. So that is very strong. That means he is saying individuality is a fact even in the future. So, and then further comes out the question of Krishna's individuality. Krishna is also going to exist as an individual. That means there is individuality of the Jiva and there is individuality of the Ishvara. So this is a very strong verse for refuting Mayavad. And that comes, you know, you see how it has worked out that Krishna has refuted impersonalism before refuting materialism. Isn't it? The way it has worked out. 2.13 is Dehinosminithadehe. Identifying with the body is materialism. Even before refuting that, Krishna has refuted impersonalism. Yeah. Padmalochan Prabhu.
Guruji, we say there is this Paramarthik and Vyavaharik, they are exclusive. But then they may say that and they cannot go from one place to another.
No, see, you know, it's one thing.
They may say that, you know, there is a difference between realizing Paramarthing and attaining Paramarthing, and even otherwise, you know, realizing Vyavaharik and falling down to Vyavaharik. So just like, you know, and that will explain this Jivan Mukta concept also very well. because otherwise they will say that, you know, are you say that there is difference between realizing Brahman and attaining Brahman, so how do you say that, you know? So we call them confused and they may say that you are also saying the same thing.
I agree with this. Obviously, when we talk about Jivan Mukta, see, every refutation that we give, they will also have a counter refutation. And therefore, Tarko Apratishta Shrutayo Vibhinna. But we have to see whether the refutations are satisfactory or not. So now, why does Shankaracharya, first of all, have to propose Paramarthi and Vyavaharik? Because he takes those statements of scripture which say that there is only oneness, Sarvam Khalmam Idam Brahma. This is one of the Mahavakyas. There is nothing except Brahma existing. That is Sarvam Khalmam Idam Brahma. So now, if this is the truth, then there is no scope for Maya. That's why earlier we were also discussing Maya is simultaneous existence, non-existence, which is the kind of things they try to explain. So they will surely give argument that it's possible to be in the to be enlightened at the same time to be aware of illusion. But the problem with this argument is that we have in our philosophy, see what happens is when we try to understand Mayavad, we try to understand Mayavad from our terms. That means, you know, when we talk about God and we hear about Jehovah or we hear about Allah, we say, oh, Allah is the same God as Krishna. We seek Allah from our perspective, but that is not their understanding. You know, the very namaz that they say, Allah Akbar, that he starts, that means there is no God except Allah. So, you know, if we want to have a dialogue with Muslims, it's no use having a dialogue on our terms because they're not accepting our terms. We will think, oh, our God is the same, but they think our God is the devil and their God is the only God. Our God is a form taken by the devil. So like that, when we understand Mayavad, we take our framework there. So our framework is that illusion is a separate entity. There is Maya Devi who creates illusion. That's why we have that verse in the Mayam Chita Tapashritam. Vyasadevan is meditation. He is the Supreme Lord. He sees Maya. And he sees Maya under control. Mayam Chita Tapashritam. That's our philosophy. And we take that vision over there. But according to their philosophy, there is no illusion. Once you are enlightened, there is no scope for illusion because there is no such thing as illusion. There is no such thing which can bring about the illusion. So therefore, we say that it's possible to be enlightened and be aware of illusion because these two are distinct states. There is enlightenment and there is illusion. But according to them, according to our philosophy, even when we become enlightened, even when we go back to the spiritual world, the material world continues to exist. And even for us, it continues to exist, although we are not in the material world. But according to their philosophy, this world is just like an illusion, it's like a dream. So it just doesn't exist only. That's like if in my dream, we will discuss about this more, I'll conclude with this example. You know, in my dream, I was aware of something. Then I wake up, when I wake up, I'm at a different level of consciousness. I cannot be simultaneously awake and dreaming. Now, I may remember my dream, that is okay. But I cannot act in the dream. Because the dream doesn't exist. So, their idea of this world is like that. So, you are Brahma, you are in Brahma, and there's nothing except Brahma, but you are dreaming. And when you wake up, then there's nothing left over there. And if you are aware and acting, then you're not yet woken up. So, there is no scope in their philosophy for acting in both cases. Although they try to juggle it and they try to explain it away, but it's very difficult for them to actually do that. Same point? Okay. Last question. We'll stop. Want to go?
What is the need of eating and sleeping then?
Yeah, that their idea is that the body has to follow its natural course.
No, but now it is, you know, paramarthic level and there is no question of vyavaharik level now.
Yeah, actually.
You cannot say that. So it means they cannot eat then.
Yeah, true. Yes. Same question, Sri Ramapuru? You had a question? No. Okay. Yes, Prabhu, please.
Small comment.
Yeah, please.
This you told about Shankaracharya glorifying as a bhakti in the beginning. So I think these Varkari people also, when they go, so Naneshwar Palki basically, you know, they are Lakshman Bose telling, they are sometimes called Mauli or something, you know. So their goal is that, you know, after reaching there, you know, after perfecting their life, so called they call it, and perfection is to become vittal at the end. Because even that Lokana Narasimha, Govinda, Govinda, Malala, Gule Chanda, so they misinterpret that meaning to be, you know, that one day I'll become Govinda. So they are using initially bhakti, like, apparently, like it looks like, you know, 15 days they're walking and all, but ultimately at the end of their life they think that they'll. So in the, especially in Naneshwar Palki, this is a concept many of, some of the people do hardcore Mayavadis.
Actually, Ganeshwar's writings are hardcore impersonalist. They are hardcore Mayavadi. At least one of his books is completely Mayavadi. It's not Ganeshwari, the another book which he has written is complete Mayavadi. Ganeshwari is like ambiguous. Vrindavan Prabhu told me, you remember? Not Pasadana. Pasadana is a simple prayer. It's a prayer for universal redemption. I'll find out. But he told me clearly. So, but the way we answer this question is, if somebody asks about Ganeshwari, yeah? Give the mic, I can't hear anything. That is impersonalist, huh? It is Mayavadi? Yeah, because he told me one book is completely Mayavadi. Ganeshwari, at least there's ambiguity. There are bhakti sections also, there is an impersonal section also. Generally, the best way to answer this question, we can't call Ganeshwar as Mayavadi directly. It will be too troublesome in Maharashtra. So, and it's also true that Ganeshwar talks about the holy name. So, what answer I saw Loknath Maharaj once gave, very practically good answer, he said. That, you know, the Ganeshwar is written in a very old-fashioned Marathi. And you cannot understand the Marathi now. It's very difficult if you read that Marathi. So, you need Marathi, you need scholars who know the Marathi at that time, and we know it, and they can render it into Marathi here now. Interestingly, I think I told this once, you know, the Chaitanya Charitamrita is translated into Bengali. Chaitanya Charitamrita is Bengali, but if you see the Bengali Chaitanya Charitamrita, what they have done is, because that is 16th century Bengali. So, they have taken the English CC, and from English they have translated back into Bengali. Because the 16th century Bengali, the current Bengalis cannot understand it. So, Chaitanya Charitamrita is translated from Bengali to Bengali. From 16th century, how it has been translated? From 16th century Bengali to 20th century English to 20th century Bengali. So that's how it works. So languages also change. So the answer that we give is that was written in 12th century, 13th century, almost 800,000 years ago before. So that Marathi is different from the current Marathi. And we need scholars who interpreted it. And those scholars are mostly impersonalist, which is true. That's why the renditions of Ganeshwar that we have today are impersonalist. But we see Ganeshwar himself exhorted people to chant the holy names, and that is what Prabhupada is telling us to do. So whatever the message of the Bhagavad Gita, that is much easily and clear, unambiguously available to us in the Gita than in Ganeshwari. So we don't minimize or disrespect Ganeshwari, but we say the same message is more easily available in Gita to us. That's how we avoid criticizing Ganeshwar. But in general, in our kirtans, I've seen some people, you know, they do Ganeshwar Maharaj ki jai. We should not do that. Tukaram Maharaj ki jai we can do, but not Ganeshwar Maharaj ki jai. Yes?
Guruji, as you said, Vyas Devasa, Krishna as well as Maya herself. So, we know a definition of Maya. Maya means which does not exist. So, which does not exist, how can we exist? That means, how to understand? And Sinti, is that Maya
does not mean that which does not exist. That is the literal meaning of Maya. But Vrite artham yat pratiyet na pratiyet chatmani tad vidyad atmano mayam yatha bhaso yatha tamaha. In the Chaturshloki, how does it define Gita? How is Maya? When you see anything without its connection to Krishna, that is Maya.
That means Maya means?
So Maya means, what does that which is not means? To see things without their connection to Krishna. They don't exist without their connection to Krishna, but we see them without their connection to Krishna. So that vision is Maya.
So when Vyasadeva saw Krishna as Maya, means personality he saw?
Not Krishna as Maya.
No. I'm saying Krishna and Maya, I'm telling. When Vyasadeva saw Krishna and Maya, that means one lady, means personality.
Yeah, Maya Devi.
That is, she is taking the role of Maya, means like that.
That is Maya. Maya Devi is a person, isn't it? Maya Devi is a person. I mean, one of the Adi forms of Durga Devi is Maya. Sadashiv is there, like that Maya Devi is there. In one sense, Maya Devi is the... Maya Devi has jurisdiction over Brahma and the Shiva of this world. See, that is Maya Devi is a consort of Sadashiv. That Sadashiv is there, na? So she controls the whole material. So that means Brahmaji, who is the creator of the material world, is also under Maya.
So that is Maya means conception like that, forgetfulness, like that puts in forgetfulness. Yeah, separate from Krishna, like that, that conception.
There is a personality Maya which creates the conception of Maya.
So regarding Maya, it cannot be literally meaning Maya doesn't exist. That should, it should not be there.
No, when we say that which does not exist means, like we say, like, you know, the material world is real, this body is real, the soul is real. To think that the soul is the body is unreal. So body is real, soul is real. But what Maya does is, Maya does not, Maya creates the unreal idea that the soul is the body. So when we say that which is not, so it is not that the body doesn't exist. The misidentification of the soul with the body, that is not true. Our philosophy is that which is not. That we have to clearly understand. It is the misconception which is not true. It is the misidentification which is not true. But matter is real, soul is real, the body is real. But we are not the body.
Maya is either a post or a personality, just like Brahma, Shiva, like that. They are post, Indra. So Maya.
No, Sadashiv is an eternal person. So like that, Maya is also eternal personality. That is her eternal seva. Yes, Dhira Prashant Prabhu had a comment, I think.
Can we say Nyaneshwari, Nyasanta Nyaneshwari is Gyan Mishra Bhakta? I don't know, but it's clear.
Possible. You can ask Vrindavan Prabhu. Yeah. We can say like that. I mean, the point is that it's not unambiguous bhakti. There are verses like Ramcharitmanas also, no? Ramcharitmanas, when it goes into bhakti, it's profusely devotional. But then there are verses which become ambiguous. Yeah, that is also true. So yes, we can. Basically, we cannot call it the bhakti grantha. At the same time, it is not strategic to criticize it also directly. So therefore, we can call it Jnana Mishra Bhakti. We can say that it is ambiguous as it is available now. And that way, we go ahead. Okay, last question. Can ask Vrindavan Prabhu. Yes. So, let's continue. He's asking a question. Where's the mic? That is the Shiva of this world, the Rudra of this world. Hare Krishna. His question is Shiva under the jurisdiction of Maya? That's your question?
Yeah. So and when Shiva comes, then Maya Devi is not coming as his consort.
Yeah, she's coming.
So like...
That's not like a plenary expansion. That's a partial expansion. So plenary means complete expansion.
So Lord Shiva acts under that Maya Devi's jurisdiction to... And masters over this Maya Devi. Is that the case?
Correct. Actually, there are, if those of you want to study Shiva Tattva, there is two issues of Krishna Kathamrut Bindu which are dedicated to Lord Shiva. You can study that, that's very nice. Yeah, can continue?
The all-pervading feature of the Lord, which exists in all circumstances of waking and sleeping, as well as in potential states, and from which the Jiva Shakti, living force, is generated as both conditioned and liberated souls, is known as Brahman. Since the Lord is the origin of both Paramatma and Brahman, He is the origin of all living entities and all else that exists. One who knows this engages himself at once in the devotional service of the Lord. Such a pure and fully cognizant devotee of the Lord is fully attached to Him in heart and soul. And whenever such a devotee assembles with similar devotees, they have no engagement but the glorification of the Lord's transcendental activities. Those who are not as perfect as the pure devotees, namely those who have realized only the Brahman or Paramatma features of the Lord cannot appreciate the activities of the perfect devotees. The Lord always helps the pure devotees by imparting necessary knowledge within their hearts, and thus out of His special favor, He dissipates all the darkness of ignorance. The speculative philosophers and yogis cannot imagine this because they more or less depend on their own strength. As stated in the Kathopanishad 1.2.23, the Lord can be known only by those whom He favors and not by anyone else. Such special favors are bestowed upon His pure devotees only. Sri Ishopanishad thus points to the favor of the Lord which is beyond the purview of the Brahma Jyoti.
Yes. So, here Prabhupada concludes this verse purport by explaining how, you know, the bhakti gives us the easiest and the best way to attain perfection, because we get the Lord's special mercy, and that mercy is dadami buddhi yogam tam. He gives us the intelligence by which we can go back to Him. So now, after talking about the Brahma Jyoti, which is one obstacle, now the other obstacle is just being in this material world. How to get out of this material world? So to remember the Lord at the time of death, that's the next prayer. Let's recite it together. Vayur anilam amritam atedam basmantam shariram om kratau smara kritam smara kratau smara kritam smara. So this verse talks about how we can remember Krishna, how actually we have to remember Krishna at the time of death. And Swayambhu Manu is praying to the Lord, my dear Lord, please help me to remember You. So although he seems to say, please remember what I have done for You, it's simply a prayer begging for mercy. So he's saying, let this body, I don't care for this body. The body and the air within the body, the pranavayu is considered very important. And a deha are very important. So both of them, I don't care for them. And let me just turn to You, my dear Lord, and I beg Your mercy. That's the mood. So,
material body is certainly a foreign dress. The Bhagavad Gita 2.20 clearly says that after the destruction of the material body, the living entity is not annihilated, nor does he lose his identity. The identity of the living entity is never impersonal or formless.
See, Prabhupada is giving two things. Not annihilated, nor does he lose his identity. So annihilated is Buddhism. Loses identity is impersonalism. To be annihilated means voidism or Buddhism. Shunyavad. And to lose his individuality is Nirvesheshavad.
The identity of the living entity is never impersonal or formless. On the contrary, it is the material dress that is formless and that takes a shape according to the form of the indestructible person. No living entity is originally formless, as is wrongly thought by those with a poor fund of knowledge. This mantra verifies the fact that the living entity exists after the annihilation of the material body. In the material world,
how does this mantra illustrate? He is saying that, you know, my dear Lord, let this body fall away, let the life end, but please remember me and have mercy on me. That means now the Upanishad Shruti, person is speaking from the enlightened level. So he is saying that the body will fall away, but I will continue to exist. This indicates that actually the individuality and the individual existence and individual existence continue even after death. There was a Greek philosopher who dealt with death in a very innovative way. He said, death will never happen to me because as long as I exist, death will not exist. When death exists, I will not exist.
but such word jugglery cannot save one from misery. Now one can explain things away like this, but one has to suffer because one has developed attachment throughout one's life. Yeah.
In the material world, material nature displays wonderful workmanship by creating varieties of bodies for the living beings according to their propensities for sense gratification. The living entity who wants to taste stool is given a material body that is quite suitable for eating stool, that of a hog. Similarly, one who wants to eat the flesh and blood of other animals may be given a tiger's body equipped with suitable teeth and claws. But the human being is not meant for eating flesh, nor does he have any desire to taste stool, even in the most aboriginal state. Human teeth are so made that they can chew and cut fruit and vegetables, although there are two canine teeth so that primitive humans can eat flesh if they so desire.
So primitive humans, that means if you say among how many teeth do we have total, so out of that canine teeth are just 1/16. So if at all somebody has to eat meat from the biological point of view, it should be 1/16 of his diet. That is the maximum. But we see, actually, the human body can digest meat, but with great difficulty. With great difficulty. So therefore, ideal situation is where one doesn't eat meat at all. And if you see, even our canine teeth are not like animals' canine teeth. We can say that I have canine teeth, but we cannot eat raw flesh. The animals can catch and tear and eat raw flesh. Now, we are given teeth in such a way that most of the vegetables and fruits we can eat raw. We may cook them for additional taste or for better digestion, better nutrition, better digestion. But practically no flesh can we eat raw. Our canine teeth are actually very, very rudimentary. They are not meant for meat eating. Just for if somebody is very addicted, there is some allowance given over there. You can go ahead. Yes, question?
But
we see the prayer, "Oh my Lord, please remember all my sacrifices, and because you are ultimate beneficiary, please remember all that I have done for you." It seems to like...
It's not exactly a prayer of pure devotional service. But it is an elevated prayer. We know, actually, Swayambhu Manu is being attacked by the Rakshasas. And at that time, he's praying to the Lord. And the Lord appears as Yajna and saves him. So, you know, it's not that... So when Draupadi is asking the Lord to please help her, now, is that prayer pure devotional service or not? She's asking for the protection of her chastity. We may say that she's not asking for the protection of chastity, just surrendering to the Lord. But what caused an impetus for that surrender is the loss of her chastity at that particular moment, the fear of the loss of her chastity. So that's why it's not anyabhilasha shunyam. It is anyabhilashita shunyam. That means that the great emergency is if a devotee calls for some material protection, if a devotee speaks or acts in a way that may not seem pure devotional, that is not considered a flaw. It is not a habit for a devotee. You know, if we are in mortal danger at that time, we pray to the Lord to save us, and we may be praying even for the saving of the material body. That is not considered wrong. But one is not habituated to asking for material benefits and material gains. So in emergencies, if somebody prays like that, it may appear to be less than pure devotional. But if the life is led in a purely devotional mood, then that is not considered a blemish.
Okay. This is like Shruti, and in Shruti, Mayavadi don't differentiate as Paramarthik and Vyavarik, right?
No, they do there also.
That means this is also a Vyavarik verse from their point of view?
Yeah, correct.
Because otherwise it shows like who is the person. Prayers has to be given to some person, and then he has to remember the prayers. So it's like very personal.
Yeah, very personal. That's why the Upanishad, that's why exactly what is in the Upanishad, moves forward from material life, comes to some verses that sound impersonalistic, and then it becomes quite unambiguously personalistic. So we can see that. And today in the afternoon class, with the last half an hour or 1 hour, we'll go over the full Upanishad once again. You see, this is the general way the Upanishads flow. So they differentiate over here also.
But in any case, the material bodies of all animals and men are foreign to the living entity. They change according to the living entity's desire for sense gratification. In the cycle of evolution, the living entity changes bodies one after another. When the world was full of water, the living entity took an aquatic form. Then he passed to vegetable life, from vegetable life to worm life, from worm life to bird life, from bird life to animal life, and from animal life to the human form. The highest developed form is this human form when it is possessed of a full sense of spiritual knowledge. The highest development of one's spiritual sense is described in this mantra. One should give up the material body, which will be turned to ashes, and allow the air of life to merge into the eternal reservoir of air. The living being's activities are performed within the body through the movements of different kinds of air, known in summary as pranavayu. The yogis generally study how to control the airs of the body. The soul is supposed to rise from one cycle of air to another until it rises to the Brahmarandra, the highest circle. From that point, the perfect yogi can transfer himself to any planet he likes. The process is to give up one material body and then enter into another. But the highest perfection of such changes occurs only when the living entity is able to give up the material body altogether, as suggested in this mantra, and enter into the spiritual atmosphere, where he can develop a completely different type of body, a spiritual body which never has to meet death or change.
So regarding this Brahmarandra and other andras, I have a PPT on this. If we get time, I'll show it in the next class, because we have a long purport to go through. It's not exactly relevant. It's to our main thought. Yesterday I showed the Vedic time PPT. We had a little time. So if we get time, let's see how we go through this. And the purpose of life is actually to attain an eternal body, not to give up the body. We want to give up the body to get something better, to get an eternal body. We want to, like Prabhupada says, that when a person gives up a job, that is to get a better job. When somebody wants to give up a job, he will give up a job so he can get a better job. Nobody wants to be penniless or povertyless. Prabhupada talks about it in Namo Akinchan Vittaya Purport, I think, in the Kunti's prayers. So he says that basically the living entity cannot give up something unless he's sure that he will get something better by that. So when there is renunciation, the renunciation comes actually when we understand that Krishna consciousness is a better option. For the Mayavadis, the renunciation comes because they think this material world is so miserable that anything is better than this. And even Brahma Jyoti with nothing, with no activity, just existence, that is also better than this. Because this world is full of misery. Yeah?
Guruji, here this mentions, you know, as the soul passes from different bodies, it appears like Darwin's theory, you know, how is it?
Yeah. See, the process of creation takes place in different ways in different yugas. Not in different yugas, in different universes. So, because we understand that this universe has a four-headed Brahma, and this universe is of a particular size. So, some details may be the same, like there is Mahavishnu, Garbhodaksha Vishnu, Shirodaksha Vishnu. But beyond the detail, the details vary. So, that means, what Prabhupada is talking about this, when the world is filled with water. So, he is not saying, if you see, it's not exactly evolution, because Prabhupada is differentiating between body and soul. Yeah? When the world is filled with water, the living entity acquires an aquatic body, and then he acquires a vegetable body. So Prabhupada says one problem with the main problem with the theory of evolution is two problems. One is it does not know about the soul, and second is it denies the action of God, the supervision of God. So apart from that also, so this particular description is about a particular universe in which first there is water, and then the souls have aquatic forms. And then through the water. So now, if you see, with respect to evolution, there is something called microevolution, which is accepted, which we also accept. That means, you know, you have the apple of this size, you can make apple of this size. Or you can make apple of this size also. So within species, naturally variation takes place, and artificially also we can bring about variation. So similarly, within the environment that we live in, also variation can take place. The scientists talk about ice age. Now it's not now it's a speculation, but it's not impossible for us to reconcile Ice Age with our Vedic understanding. Because yes, there are upheavals in this world, and one upheaval could be that all life is destroyed by the temperature becoming very cold. So in that sense, now we don't accept their idea of progression from Stone Age, Ice Age, Mesolithic Age, and all those ages. That hierarchy, that progression we don't accept. But the idea that the world at one particular time could have been filled with water is not irreconcilable with our philosophy. So when Prabhupada is talking about it, he's referring to some universe where that's how life takes place. Okay?
Because generally in DYS we tell them that all the forms are existing together, coexisting. It's not actually coming from one form another, as he's mentioning in the purport. First he was his, then it became like that. But actually all simultaneously coexisted.
Yes. Prabhupada also says the same thing, and Prabhupada uses 10.8 for that. Sarva bhutani kaunteya prakritim yanti mamikam kalpakshaye punastani kalpadav visrujamyaham. So, sarva bhutani, he says. So, all species are destroyed at the end of creation, and all species are created at the next kalpakshaye punastani kalpadav visrujamyaham. Visrujami means to create. So, Prabhupada also in his conversations talks about this. So, Dutakarma Prabhu also uses this verse to show how that with our philosophy, the gradual creation of species is not reconcilable. But this is the only place where Prabhupada has talked something like this. So, we have to see the complete picture where Prabhupada generally talks about all species being created in one moment. But it's again, this is not necessary that it has to happen like this in all universes. So, when Prabhupada is talking about this, he is referring to some other universe where such a thing happens.
Here in the material world,
I heard about this. Here Prabhupada is not talking about this one species changing into another species. It is like a living entity passing from one species to another.
So that is correct. Prabhupada is not saying about one species changing into another, that's true. But what Prabhupada is saying over here is that when the world was filled with water, that time the soul had an aquatic body. That means when the world was filled with water, it seems to indicate that other bodies were not possible. So that's why the soul took an aquatic body. And later on, when things became more suitable, then it acquired a vegetable body. So that means, not that Prabhupada is saying one species changed into another, but there was a time when only one species was possible. Other species, apart from aquatic, other species were not possible. The world... possible, yeah. So if there are times when Pralaya takes place like that. And yesterday in the PPT we were seeing how at the end of Manu there is a flood of water. So maybe this is not referring to the original creation of life, which is altogether. But after a Pralaya, the reinstatement may not take place directly with all species coming. Yes, Pitamba Chetan.
Hare Krishna. Prabhuji here appears to be like impersonal word like that statement. Here is, one should give up the material body which will be turned to ashes and allow the air of life to merge into the entire reservoir of air. That means how to understand this?
Well, merging is not a problem at all. It is the problem of soul merging with Brahma Jyoti. You see, when the soul goes back to the spiritual world, it is described that the elements merge into that particular elements in the universal covering. The individual mind merges with this universal mind. That means, around the universe there are coverings. So there are these 8 coverings. So while leaving, the soul gives up his material body, gross material body. But the subtle material body, what happens to it? Subtle material body, it is shed as he goes through those coverings. So the individual mind merges with the universal mind. The individual intelligence merges with the universal intelligence. The individual ego merges with the universal ego. So, as in the Bible, it says, from dust to rust, from ashes to ashes. This body is made of material ingredients, which will merge with the universal material ingredients. But what is the problem is the merging of the soul with God. That is what the impersonalists claim, and that is not what is the conclusion of the scripture. So, if you see in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, we went through all those verses in our Bhagavatam, na? Our Bhagavatam, see, na, while meditating, the yogi meditates and thinks that in his meditation, he lets the air merge with the air, the earth merge with the earth. That's how Dhritarashtra also left his body. So, that is the process of meditation by which one attains liberation.
But it is not said that he let his soul merge with the Brahma Jyoti. The individual elements merging is, that is an acceptable way of attaining liberation, devotional liberation.
So that means somebody attaining Brahma Jyoti also doesn't have a subtle body. And if he falls down, he must be quite pure.
Yeah, correct. Correct.
Here in the material world, material nature forces the living entity to change his body due to his different desires for sense gratification. These desires are represented in the various species of life, from germs to the most perfected material bodies, those of Brahma and the demigods. All of these living entities have bodies composed of matter in different shapes. An intelligent man sees oneness not in the variety of the bodies, but in the spiritual identity. The spiritual spark, which is a part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, is the same whether he is in a body of a hog or in the body of a demigod. The living entity takes on different bodies according to his pious and vicious activities. The human body is highly developed and has full consciousness. According to the Bhagavad Gita 7.19, the most perfect man surrenders unto the Lord after many, many lifetimes of culturing knowledge. The culture of knowledge reaches perfection only when the knower comes to the point of surrendering unto the Supreme Lord Vasudev. Otherwise, even after attaining knowledge of one's spiritual identity, if one does not come to the point of knowing that the living entities are eternal parts and parcels of the whole and can never become the whole, one has to fall down again into the material atmosphere. Indeed, one must fall down even if he has become one with the Brahma Jyoti.
One must fall down. So it's essential. Prabhupada is quite categorical about it. Yeah.
As we have learned from previous mantras, the Brahma Jyoti, emanating from the transcendental body of the Lord, is full of spiritual sparks that are individual entities with a full sense of existence. Sometimes these living entities want to enjoy their senses and therefore they are placed in the material world to become false lords under the dictation of the senses. The desire for lordship is a material disease of the living being, for under the spell of sense enjoyment he transmigrates through the various bodies manifested in the material world. Becoming one with the Brahma Jyoti does not represent mature knowledge. Only by surrendering unto the Lord completely and developing one's sense of spiritual service does one reach the highest perfectional stage.
So, first Prabhupada's, this verse is, the theme of this verse is what? One has to give up the body. So first Prabhupada says how it's a foreign dress which you have to give up. Then he explains how, after giving up, what do we do? It's not that we have to go to Brahman, we have to go to Bhagwan. And now, he comes, this is the whole thing what Prabhupada is till now giving is the background. Now Prabhupada comes to directly explaining this verse. Yeah.
In this mantra, the living entity prays to enter the spiritual kingdom of God after relinquishing his material body and material air. The devotee prays to the Lord to remember his activities and the sacrifices he has performed before his material body is turned into ashes. He makes this prayer at the time of death with full consciousness of his past deeds and of the ultimate goal. One who is completely under the rule of material nature remembers the heinous activities he performed during the existence of his material body, and consequently he gets another material body after death. The Bhagavad Gita 8.6 confirms this truth. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tejatyante kalevaram tam tamai vaitikanteya sada tad bhava bhavitaha. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, O son of Kunti, that state he will attain without fail. Thus the mind carries the living entity's propensities into the next life. Unlike the simple animals who have no developed mind, the dying human being can remember the activities of his life like dreams at night. Therefore, his mind remains surcharged with material desires, and consequently, he cannot enter into the spiritual kingdom with a spiritual body. The devotees, however, develop a sense of love for Godhead by practicing devotional service to the Lord. Even if at the time of death a devotee does not remember his service to the Lord does not forget him. This prayer is given to remind the Lord of the devotee's sacrifices. But even if there is no such reminder, the Lord does not forget the service rendered by his pure devotee.
So, the next section is very sweet and it's very important. Just a couple of points before we move ahead. So, when we have to face the moment of death, we often have a flashback of all that happened in our life. A quick overview. And if there are intense mundane experiences that we have had, then they are what come back in our life. They are what dominate our mind. But if we have had intense devotional experiences, they will be what dominate our mind. So, sada tad bhava bhavitaha. So here, the bhava bhavitaha. Bhava means emotion, bhavita means manifest. So that particular emotion will manifest as the next body, that emotional attachment. So, you know, if we look at our life, probably now most of us are around 30. So maybe 20 to 25 years or 20 years we have had non-devotional impressions in our life. And for the last 5, 10, 15 years, we are trying to cultivate devotional impressions and erase the non-devotional impressions and forget them. And actually, if we continue devotional service for maybe 10, 20 more years, then what will happen is we will have 30 years of devotional impressions and 20 years of non-devotional impressions, which will be very, very far away, which will be very distant. So the chances of our mind of we remembering Krishna are much more. So we may sometimes feel even now I am being haunted by my past conditionings, but they will all decrease as we go on with our devotional service, and more devotional impressions will crowd our mind. But one important thing is, while living as devotees, you know, we have to cultivate devotional memories and not non-devotional memories. Because even while living as devotees, we may have conflicts with others. And if we continue to meditate on that and contemplate on that, then what happens? Those memories dominate our mind. So that it, we should not let that happen. Even in devotional life, because we are not yet pure devotees, so we also have non-devotional interactions. So we should not let those crowd or dominate our minds. So try to cherish the devotional memories and try to forget the non-devotional memories. We cannot consciously forget. We cannot say, I want to forget this. There's no erase button that we can press to forget it. But the erase button is to not recall. The mind is such a thing that if you don't recall, it gets erased. Or it goes so far into the background that it will not be troubling us or disturbing us. So it's important that even when we have non-devotional interactions, we just forget it. That's not what is important in my life. That's not what I have come here for. So Radha Maharaj in lecture defines intelligence very nicely. He says, intelligence means to distinguish between what is essential and what is peripheral. What is important and what is insignificant. So intelligence means to differentiate between what is essential and what is peripheral. Intelligence means to differentiate between what is essential and what is peripheral. And to hold on to the essential and to let go of the peripheral. And to hold on to the essential and to let go of the peripheral. So, yes, we have non-devotional interactions. We see certain devotees behave in certain ways which disappoint us. But we let go of that. And we hold on. Oh, he's still dedicating his life to Krishna. He's still trying to serve Krishna. That's why, you know, one good exercise that mental discipline, which I have failed utterly, but I'm still trying, is, you know, as soon as we see a devotee, our first thought about him should be positive. It's a very good and very tough mental exercise. Because what happens, depending on our interactions, For those with whom we have good relationship, not a problem. Oh, my friend has come. But somebody else with whom we are not such at pleasant interactions, as soon as we see that person or think of that person, the first thought that comes is negative. So, you know, so we may later remember. Sometimes we don't even remember and we continue with the negative thought. But later on we remember, oh, he's still a devotee. But we should try, let the first thought be a devotional thought. Then what will happen is, in our interactions with that person, first we'll remember, this person is my god brother. He may be having this conditioning, this thing, he may have behaved in that way. He's my god brother. So if that thought comes in the first in my mind, then that will be very wonderful. And what happens is, with that positive thought, when the future interaction takes place, there will be much more positive energy in it. But if the first thought is negative, you know, he's an irresponsible person, he's a lazy person, he's this, that. And then subconsciously, subtly we radiate out that vibration. And that person also feels it. It's difficult, especially with those devotees with whom we don't have such pleasant relationships. But still, it's not so difficult to do that, because at least we can remember their spiritual connections. You know, I may be seeing fault, but my spiritual master has accepted him. Srila Prabhupada has accepted him. So who am I to reject him or condemn him? So even if we can't see the good in that devotee, at least we can see his connection with our spiritual master and Prabhupada. And that is at least something which deserves our respect, even if we feel that devotee doesn't deserve my respect. So that way, we can try to have a positive thought. And then, this way we will have more and more positive impressions in our mind. And then, we can hope that we will be able to remember Krishna at the time of that. When Stok Krishna Prabhu passed away, you know, it was very exemplary how he left, how he faced the cancer. But then Maharaj told very clearly that, no, this is very special death. We can, all of us cannot expect to die like this. We may die in accident, we may die alone somewhere. Of course, we try to always travel with devotees, so hopefully somebody will be there. But you know, brutal. but still, you know, we cannot expect that we will have an ideal death. So whatever way death comes, we have to try to prepare. Now, Prabhupada elaborates on this theme, how Krishna does not forget what we have done for him. Then Prabhupada takes a very interesting angle over here. He says that Krishna does not forget the devotional service we have done, even if we later on commit some sinful activities. So Prabhupada takes that theme. Now why will Krishna forget? If we are still devotees, then there is no question of Krishna forgetting. But suppose somebody has been a devotee and then he gives up devotional service and he has forgotten Krishna. So still that the Lord will not forget him. And Prabhupada takes that theme and he elaborates from 9.30 purport. Elaborates. Let's go ahead. Yes,
the Lord. Here.
As you said, this all impression comes while passing, leaving the body, like whatever impression and which person is attached to the, that become fixed like that. So, what about if impression is not good, congenial and conducive, and at a time of death? Well, what happens that time? What Lord does? Because he has practiced spiritual life, whole life as well as, but impression because of back previous life and conditioning just like came upon at that time. So how Lord takes role like that? As you said, Lord also doesn't forget, like what
principle? Yeah, so if you have acquired the impressions, then it is that much of a struggle to remember Krishna. It's not that easy. So if we have acquired certain impressions
at the end of life, I'm telling
you. Yeah, so certainly we cannot expect that if somebody has fallen, if he is able to remember Krishna, it is through a struggle. It is only through a struggle. And Krishna, and there are different things that Krishna can do ultimately. Because many times the pain that one goes through, the terminal stage, whether it is through cancer or something like that, that is something which purifies the devotee. That means that becomes a very intense time when the devotee is forced to take shelter of Krishna. And that erases off the whole thing, the past memories. Because that time, you know, in the pain, the devotee by remembering Krishna has experienced shelter of Krishna. And that becomes his solace. So the past memories, see, the memories may not go away, but we may not choose those memories. So if somebody has been choosing the memories again, then Krishna sometimes puts circumstances where they are forced to make the right choices. And one such circumstances is probably a terminal disease, a painful terminal disease. But it's not that painful terminal disease produces bhakti. You know, we should not pray for cancer. Krishna give me cancer so that I'll become serious about my bhakti. It's not. It's actually the blessings of devotees which we have got by serving Krishna that enable us to turn to Krishna amidst the cancer. So otherwise all cancer patients would become devotees. It doesn't happen like that. So it's only bhakti that produces bhakti. Bhakti sanjayate bhakti. So by the association of bhakta, when we serve him, the bhakti comes from his heart to our heart. And then we may forget it temporarily, but later on when the difficulty comes, when you remember Krishna, that is that bhakti which we have received as a blessing from that Vaishnava earlier. So if we have had past memories, we try to avoid cultivating them now. Yeah, but what can we do? A devotee has fallen, he has to go through that much trouble.
I'm telling, not this time, life, living life while practicing. I'm telling, somebody has lived the life and practiced Krishna consciousness as well as what impression was there. At a time of death comes that time, because there's no chance like that to cultivate, because there's no facility.
But then,
what happens that time?
We know that past time, Ramanujacharya asked Kanchipurna to ask Lord Varadaraj. So what if I don't remember you at the time of death? So Lord said, I will force myself into your mind and make you remember me. That is the Lord's promise. So you know, what happens in our bhakti is that many times we worry too much about what the Lord will do, and we don't worry much about what we should do. So if we keep our part, the Lord will keep his part. So he said, you know, Devanut Maharaj was giving a lecture in IIT. So he was telling that, you know, actually you don't have to worry about problems that don't exist and not realistic. He says, if you are practicing devotional service, Krishna will take care of you. You don't have to worry about that. Just like when you come to IIT, you have to worry about whether you are studying in IIT or not. You don't have to worry if IIT closes down. Isn't it? There is some possibility that IIT will close down, but there is no possibility that Krishna will let us down. But the point is that we should take care of problems which are realistic. So, as a student in IIT, how often does thought come, what if IIT closes down? Because IIT will close down, so I will not take admission in IIT. Who will ever think like that, isn't it? So we don't have to worry about imaginary problems. If we keep our part, Krishna will surely keep his part. Let us focus on what we can do to the best of our ability. Yeah, ask not what the law, what, actually that was a quote of Lincoln, no not Lincoln, Kennedy. And he said, ask not what the nation has done for you, ask what you have done for the nation. The same way we can say, ask not what the Lord has done for me, ask what I have done for the Lord. It's a good one.
The Lord clearly describes his intimate relationship with his devotees in the Bhagavad Gita 9.32-34. Even if one commits the most abominable action, if he is engaged in devotional service, he is to be considered saintly because he is properly situated in his denomination. He quickly becomes righteous and attains lasting peace. O son of Kunti, declare it boldly that my devotee never perishes. O son of Pritha, those who take shelter in me, though they be of lower birth, women, Vaishyas, as well as Shudras, worker, can attain the supreme destination. How much more this is so of the righteous Brahmanas, the devotees and the saintly kings. Therefore, having come to this temporary miserable world, engage in loving service unto me. Engage your mind, always thinking of me, become my devotee, offer obeisances to me and worship me. Being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me.
Chakravarti Pad, in his commentary to these verses, he said there's a conversation, mental conversation between Krishna and Arjuna. So when Krishna says, even if my devotee commits most unrighteous activities, still he is going to be considered saintly. So Arjuna says, a saintly person is one who behaves in a saintly way. If somebody is behaving in an abominable way, how can you consider him saintly? Then Krishna speaks the next word, Kshipram Bhavati Dharmatma. Very soon he becomes righteous. Then Arjuna says, yeah. If he becomes righteous, then there is no problem considering saintly. But what if somebody continues to be unrighteous? Then it says, even if he continues to be unrighteous, Kaunteya Pratijani Name Bhaktaha Pranashyati. Even if he continues to be unrighteous, still he will not perish. Still I will take care of him. Still I will protect him. So Krishna will bring him back to the right path.
Now often we use this verse Kaunte Pratijani Name Bhakta Pranashati for physical protection, how Krishna protects his devotees. But the context is more of spiritual protection. So I was going through, asked Radhanath Maharaj this question, that we see there are many disciples of Prabhupada, or at least several disciples of Srila Prabhupada, who seem to love Prabhupada very much. They constantly talk about Prabhupada and they glorify Prabhupada, but they are not able to follow the standards that Prabhupada had set. They may not be able to follow the regulative principles, or they have had difficulties in their spiritual life in the past when they could not follow. So normally we say that if somebody loves the spiritual master, that love should be expressed by following his instructions. Now here we see, clearly see, that they have love for the spiritual master, but they are not following the spiritual master's instruction. So how do we understand it? So Maharaj said, there are different degrees of love for the spiritual master. And the highest degree of love for the spiritual master is seen when you do the will of the spiritual master. And of course, if somebody is constantly speaking about the spiritual master and glorifying the spiritual master, that also indicates the love for the spiritual master. But that is not the level of love that the spiritual master is satisfied with. Yeah, it's nice you are always talking about me, but what about following my instructions? And it says, not only is Srila Prabhupada not satisfied with that, but in their hearts, even they themselves are not satisfied. They know that I am not up to the standard of Srila Prabhupada. And they regret that. And they are striving to come up to the standard. And because they have done past service, and now also they are glorifying Srila Prabhupada and trying to serve Srila Prabhupada, they are very dear to Prabhupada. And by Prabhupada's mercy, Prabhupada will lift them up and take them up back to Godhead. But we have not done that kind of service. And so if we fall from the standards, we can't justify that I love my spiritual master. So yes, Prabhupada, we see, we have heard many stories about how Prabhupada arranged, Krishna arranged, that the devotees who had fallen away, they came back to Krishna's lotus feet at the last moment, and they returned back to the spiritual world by living their body in a very, very good consciousness, in very good circumstances and very good consciousness. So actually Krishna takes care from his side. Prabhupada will take care from his side. But from our side, in our love for Krishna, for Srila Prabhupada is seen, yes, surely we should talk about Krishna. But along with that, we also should do what Krishna wants. If you see, in the second chapter, when Arjuna asks the symptoms of a self-realized person. Tita pragyasya ka bhasha samadhistasya keshava. Siddhi kim prabhasheta kim asita vrajeta kim. So, there, he says, ka bhasha, what is his language? How does he speak? How does he act? Now, I think either it's Balde Vidya Bhushan or Chakravarti Pad. They say that this bhasha doesn't refer to language directly. What it refers is, bhasha is that which does bhashya, by which we do bhashan, or by which we write bhashya. That means that by which we describe. So, when he is asking Sita Pragyasya ka bhasha, what are his symptoms? That is the actual question. And although Prabhupada translates it as, what is his language? See, the purport Prabhupada says is, every person is known by his symptoms. A wealthy person is known by his symptoms. A sick person is known by his symptoms. Similarly, what are the symptoms of a transcendental person? That Arjuna is asking. So that's why, you know, sometimes when Prabhupada gives us word-to-word translation and purport, he's actually giving us three translations. So word to word translation is one translation. Translation sentence is another translation. Means another Acharya's rendition. And the purport is another Acharya's rendition. That's why Prabhupada is giving us both. The literal bhasha means language. But Chakravarti Pada is giving the insight that the bhasha means symptoms. So Prabhupada is giving us that in the purport. Sometimes if we see purport and translation unrelated, it is that actually there is something deeper going on over there. But the point I was making is, there when he talks about what are the symptoms? Sita pragyasya ka samadhi siddhi kim prabhasheta kim asita vrajeta kim. Kim prabhasheta, how does he speak? That is the second question again. And how does he sit? How does he walk? Those are the questions. So now the first answer that he gives is, prajahati yada kaman sarvan partha manogatan. Atmanyeva atmanatushta sita pragyasya tochyate. That means he gives up all material desires and satisfied within the self. there Krishna is talking about karma yoga. He has not yet revealed himself and he has not yet revealed bhakti. That's why he is saying atmanyeva atmanatushta. For that is satisfaction in devotional service. And a secondary symptom is what he speaks. So speaking is important. Prabhupada would say that when George Harrison asked him, who is a guru? He said, one who is addicted, most addicted to. How can we know who is a bona fide guru? One who is the most addicted to Krishna. So one symptom of being addicted to Krishna is he will speak about Krishna always. But not only speak about Krishna, his whole life is devoted to Krishna. And primarily, his source of happiness is Krishna. His source of happiness is not other things of this world. So Krishna's love for us is unfailing. Actually no, Krishna's love for us is never failing. Unfortunately, our love for him is always failing. It always keep failing and falling. But Krishna never gives us up. So now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives a different angle in his commentary on this verse. Can you go ahead?
Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains these verses in this way. One should regard a devotee of Krishna to be on the right path of the saints. Even though such a devotee may seem to be a sudurachara, a person of loose character, one should try to understand the real purport of the word sudurachara. A conditioned soul has to act for double functions, namely for the maintenance of the body and again for self-realization. Social status, mental development, cleanliness, austerity, nourishment and the struggle for existence are all for the maintenance of the body. The self-realization part of one's activities is executed in one's occupation as a devotee of the Lord, and one performs actions in that connection also. One must perform these two different functions along parallel lines because a conditioned soul cannot give up the maintenance of his body. The proportion of activities for maintenance of the body decreases, however, in proportion to the increase in devotional service. As long as the proportion of devotional service does not come to the right point, there is a chance for an occasional exhibition of worldliness. But it should be noted that such worldliness cannot continue for long, because by the grace of the Lord, such imperfections will come to an end very shortly. Therefore, the path of devotional service is the only right path. If one is on the right path, even an occasional occurrence of worldliness does not hamper one in the advancement of self-realization.
So, he's talking about the swadharma. So, we have a bodily dharma and we have a spiritual dharma. So as spiritual dharma, we are just devotees, servants of Krishna. Now, in the Varnashram system, the bodily dharma was relatively uncomplicated. In the modern society, the bodily dharma becomes very complicated. And when we have to live in this world, at that time, for the sake of living in this world, one has to interact with the material energy. You cannot avoid that. And while interacting with the material energy, one may get influenced. So he's saying four things over here. Social status, mental development, cleanliness, austerity, nourishment, and the struggle for existence. All these are for the maintenance of the body. So, although a devotee will try his best, but a devotee, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is talking more for grahastha, some of it is applicable to brahmacharis also. But a devotee may try his best, but it's very difficult to be in an entirely uncontaminated environment when one is living in the grahastha life. One may have to contact with worldly things. Even the most brahminical job which we have is for a devotee's teaching job. But if you see in one sense, what are they teaching? They're teaching avidya. Isn't it? So that also has its influence. The environment is, even in the academics, the environment is quite envious and political and materialistic. So a person may get influenced by the material environment, and that is to some extent unavoidable. Of course, Prabhupada says as one becomes more and more intense in one's devotional service, then the effect becomes lesser and lesser. So, because of this contact with the material energy, one may be temporarily influenced. But what is the? It's a very interesting verse. Api chet su duracharo bhajate mam ananya bhag. So ananya bhag means with a undeviating attitude, he's performing unbroken devotional service. So if he's performing unbroken devotional service, then how can he be sudaracharo? Isn't it? If he is Durachara, that means he already has given up devotional service. He cannot be performing unbroken devotional service. Now, what this means is that in the practice of devotional service, a devotee has to do devotional service as well as worldly duties. While doing worldly duties, a devotee may fall prey to some anartha. He may fall prey to lust, he may fall prey to greed, may fall prey to this or that. Difficult to hear?
Suppose we can start at 3 o'clock at 3 to 5:30. Or 2:30 to 5 or 3 to 5:30. There are two options. Because now or though, okay, we'll take vote. How many want to continue this way till 1 o'clock? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. And how many want 2:30 to 5? How many want 3 to 5:30? Okay, two options are there. One is now finish it or come early. Finish it, how many are there for one? First. Okay. 15 are there. No, second you asked, the second. How many are there for second? 8, 2, 3, 4, 1, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And a neutral means they will go to a majority. We'll continue with it.
Okay. So, we are talking about how, because of the contact with the material energy, sometimes some contamination may take place. It's like we want to go for preaching from here to say Suratkal or Kharagpur or wherever. So here we are doing some spiritual activity, there we are doing some spiritual activity. But we have a material body and we have to go to the material world. So what happens is, we may see certain things, certain thoughts may come, certain desires may come. But how can a devotee be, I was discussing the point, how can a devotee be, who is Ananya Bhav, be Sudaracharu? Somebody is practicing unbroken devotional service, he cannot be Sudaracharu. That means his determination to practice devotional service is not lost. He may occasionally fall prey because of the force of temptation, the force of circumstance, but immediately he gets up and continues his devotional service. In that sense, he is Ananya Bhak. So, sometimes we may be overpowered by circumstances. So, if that happens, then we should try to orient our life in such a way that we avoid those circumstances. Or if we have to go in those circumstances, then we have to make sure that we are strong enough to go there. But if that happens occasionally, that is not considered to be there is a difference between a fall and a slip. So that is something like a slip. And Krishna helps the devotee get up, and Krishna does not consider that devotee to be fallen. Still considers him to be saintly. So, Prabhupada says, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says here, that once devotional service comes to the right point, then there will be no chance for the occasional exhibition of worldliness. For a very advanced devotee, even when he goes in the material world, he is actually seeing from a spiritual perspective. And he is seeing with compassion. Unfortunately, many of us see with passion. We get agitated. So, we work at it at two levels. One level is that we try to avoid going into situations as much as we can. And secondly, we try to intensify our devotional service by which we become stronger and stronger. But for us, it's just bad thoughts coming most of the time. But for those who actually live in the world, sometimes they are compelled. Suppose somebody is working in a company, or working in a government job, and everybody is corrupt over there. The devotee doesn't want to do any corruption, but if he doesn't do, he will get fired. So what can he do at that time?
So it said that actually that time he can accept that money, because otherwise, in being honest, he may get transferred, he may lose his job, and his own devotional life will become very needlessly complicated. So he can accept that and not use even a drop of it for sense gratification. Use it all for devotional service. Give it all to Krishna. But that doesn't mean he eagerly take that. He should not take it as much as possible. Krishna doesn't want that sort of Lakshmi. Krishna doesn't want that sort of Lakshmi. But the idea is, if one is put in a situation, one is forced to do that, one should minimize it. And if it's unavoidable, one does it and doesn't let that stain oneself by connecting with Krishna. But still it is possible, as long as one is in the material world. So that is what it means when we have these two duties, the bodily duty and the, just like, you know, a devotee may not be a glutton. That means, glutton means one who eats a lot. But sometimes there is a feast, and then as Acharya Maharaj says, the devotee consumes impressive quantities of prasad. So, you know, we should condemn that devotee as a glutton for that. That actually is an occasional exhibition of worldliness. And as long as the devotee is sincerely continuing devotional service, then these sort of displays will also decrease and they will go away eventually. But the danger is that if we don't, when such a thing happens, a lapse takes place, a slip takes place, if we don't become cautious and take preventive measures, then the slip will repeat and it will eventually become a fall. So from Krishna's side, Krishna does not take that slip very seriously. He does not consider that as a, he still loves his devotee. But still the fact is that when we slip, Maya has attacked and weakened us. And because we have become weak, when Maya attacks again, we'll become weaker. So it is a weakness which has happened. And Maya has noticed that, okay, this person is weak over here, so she will attack again over there itself. So that Maya will attack, like in boxing, when two boxers are fighting, now the boxer hits somebody's cheek and he finds that he wins. That means he understands, well, this person already had a wound over here. So there is full energy will focus on hitting over that at that point only. Hit where it hurts. That's the slogan in boxing. Hit where it hurts. So like that, that slip itself may not be seen by Krishna as a serious flaw, but it has become like a weakness in our armor. And Maya has seen that, and Maya will hit us again. And we will find that once we fall prey to temptation, we will find that the temptation is there everywhere. We will find that our vulnerability to the temptation increases more and more. That means there are many, once we fall prey to the temptation, the stimuli that awaken that temptation start coming in more frequency from different directions. So we have to take preventive measures. And then when we strengthen ourselves, pray to Krishna and do some voluntary atonement, like voluntary atonement, not in terms of torturing ourselves, but intensifying our devotional service, then we have strengthened ourselves, and then Maya will not attack us again, or Maya will not be able to penetrate our defenses when she attacks. She will always attack. But from that side, that means, you know, Krishna is compassionate, but Maya is not compassionate. You know, Maya is, as a service to Krishna, she is cruel. Bhagavatam says, Vaishnavi Janamohini. She is a Vaishnavi, but what is her service? Janamohini, to delude all living beings. So if she sees there is a weakness in our bhakti, she will attack us over there. And that's why there is a danger is there for a devotee. So as I said, Ramanath Maharaj says in one lecture, all fall down begins with compromise. All fall down begins with compromise. So we start by compromising some small standard, and the small standard becomes bigger and bigger and bigger, till eventually there's fall down. So the compromise is created by Maya first. So when the compromise happens, we realize it and we reform it. Otherwise, it keeps becoming worse and worse and worse. Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. It was very wonderful explanation for personal application. I just wanted to know that if I am not wrong, even like Bhaktivinoda Thakur has not mentioned about position of the person who is practicing Krishna consciousness. It's mentioned in the purview of Krishna. And if I am not wrong, I think Prabhupada also does the same thing in that verse.
Purport. Correct.
So why is it that Acharyas have not also given us warning here that on a personal level also one has to be very careful that he doesn't act in, you know?
See, many times the Acharyas follow the mood of Krishna. Here the mood of Krishna is compassion. There are other places where Krishna, Prabhupada will say, actually in Hawaii and Australia, there was one group of devotees who was quite loose. They had been following somebody else earlier, and their guru became a disciple of Prabhupada. So that whole group came to Prabhupada. But their guru himself was a little loose devotee, and they were still attached to him. So this group had the idea, if you chant Hare Krishna, that is good enough. And even if you are not able to follow the regular principle, that is not all that important. Chanting is what is important. So they asked Prabhupada, when Prabhupada came, either it was in Hawaii or in Australia. Prabhupada, if somebody is chanting, isn't chanting enough? Yes, chanting is enough, Prabhupada said. Then, you know, this devotee want to carry that. There was other group of, so these devotees, you would not come to the temple. So the temple devotees said, but Prabhupada, doesn't one have to follow the regulative principles? Another devotee pointed out. Was, yes. And again this devotee asked, Prabhupada, if somebody is chanting, isn't that enough? Prabhupada said, no. Your chanting has to be without offense. And if you are breaking the regulative principle, then you are committing the seventh offense. The chanting will not have the benefit. So we cannot justify our repeated lapses by saying that I am chanting. So there is strict warning given in scriptures about this also. Namna baladyasya hi papa buddhi. That says great offense. And that will nullify the effect of the chanting of the holy names to a large extent. But generally, when the acharyas are speaking, they follow Krishna's mood. In fact, they may extend Krishna's mood of compassion even further. And they may talk like that. But there are other places where the acharyas do talk about other things. The seventh offense is quite prominent. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself would talk about it a lot. The seventh offense, how the chanting has very little, has minimal effect if one is repeatedly committing the seventh offense. Okay. Let's go ahead.
The facilities of devotional service are denied by the impersonalist because they are attached to the Brahma Jyoti feature of the Lord.
So what is this facility of devotional service? It is the mercy of the Lord.
As suggested in the previous mantras, they cannot penetrate the Brahma Jyoti because they do not believe in the personality of Godhead. Their business is mostly word jugglery and mental speculation. Consequently, the impersonalists pursue a fruitless labor as confirmed in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, 12.5. All the facilities suggested in this mantra.
What is 12.5? Klesho diktarastesham avyakta asakta chetasam avyakta hi gatir dukkham dehvadbhyam. So this purpose your fruitless struggle, Prabhupada is saying.
All the facilities
suggested. So Prabhupada is compassion is condemning Mayavad beyond Krishna. Krishna is saying it's a painful struggle. Prabhupada is saying it's a fruitless struggle. Because it is klesho diktarastesham. Progress is very slow and painful. Prabhupada is saying it's fruitless because even if you succeed, you will fall back again. So in that sense, it is fruitless.
All the facilities suggested in this mantra can be easily obtained by constant contact with the personal feature of the Absolute Truth. Devotional service to the Lord consists essentially of 9 transcendental activities. Hearing about the Lord, glorifying the Lord, remembering the Lord, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, worshipping the Lord, offering prayers to the Lord, serving the Lord, enjoying friendly association with the Lord, and surrendering everything unto the Lord. These 9 principles of devotional service, taken all together or one by one, help a devotee remain constantly in touch with God. In this way, at the end of life, it is easy for the devotee to remember the Lord. By adopting only one of these 9 principles, the following renowned devotees of the Lord were able to achieve the highest perfection. First, by hearing of Lord Maharaj Parikshit, the hero of Srimad Bhagavatam attained the desired result.
Interesting, Prabhupada is calling Parikshit Maharaj as the hero, not Krishna as the hero. Because for there the heroic activity is to be fixed in Krishna when death is coming and to go back to Krishna.
Second, just by glorifying the Lord, Shukadeva Goswami, the speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam, attained his perfection. Third, by praying to the Lord, Akrura attained the desired result. Fourth,
By remembering the Lord, Prahlad Maharaj attained the desired result. Fifth, by worshipping the Lord, Prithu Maharaj attained perfection. Sixth, by serving the lotus feet of the Lord, the goddess of fortune Lakshmi attained perfection. Seventh, by rendering personal service to the Lord, Hanuman attained the desired result. Eighth, through his friendship with the Lord, Arjun attained the desired result. Ninth, by surrendering everything he had to the Lord, Maharaj Bali attained the desired result.
Now here, there is a difference between Dasyam and Sakhyam as limbs of devotional service, and Dasya Rasa and Sakhya Rasa as eternal rasas in the spiritual world. That's why you will see all the five rasas are not there here. Because Dasyam and Sakhyam can be forms of devotional service for a sadhaka. But Vatsalya and Madhurya cannot be forms of devotional service for a sadhaka. Now sadhaka cannot prematurely think of Krishna as his son or think of himself as a Krishna as his lover. That may be the rasa in the sadhya stage. And to some extent Shanta can be equated with Smaran. When Shanta Rasa, somebody is doing Smaran of Krishna. So there's a difference. What we do at the Siddha stage, in the absolute sense, the devotional activities continue. Now we say in bhakti, what we do in the beginning and what we do at the end is the same. But the mellows of the relationship may be different. The gopis are also thinking about Krishna, serving Krishna, chanting Krishna's name. But they are doing it in the Madhurya Bhava. We cannot prematurely do it in the Madhurya Bhava. That's why Prabhupada told us, even when we do deity worship, we are worshipping Radha Krishna, but we worship them in Lakshmi Narayan mode. Why? Because at the sadhana stage, we can only adopt those aspects of the sadhya siddha stage which will not have a damaging effect on us. If prematurely we start thinking that Krishna is dependent on me, that will be foolish for us. Or prematurely we start thinking that, you know, I have a gopi body and I am trying to have a conjugal relationship with Krishna. That's why it's... So here Sakhya and Dasya refers to the activities done in the Sakhya and the Dasya mood. No, actually a devotee feels Krishna as his most intimate friend. Surudam Sarva Bhutanam. Krishna also says that. So this friendship is Tvameva Mata Chapita Tvameva Tvameva Vandusha Sakha Tvameva. So Sakhya is Krishna feels that devotee feels that Krishna is my most constant companion. He's always with me. I can share my heart with him. It's no doubt in a mood of reverence. Like it is said with the Guru, what is that? Brahmachari Guru Dale Vasandata Guru Hatam Acharan Dasvan Nicho Guru Suruda Sauradam. So that Suruda is, he feels that is my best friend. But it is in the mood of reverence, the mood of respect, but still he is my greatest well-wisher, he is my greatest friend. A devotee feels like that. So that is possible. That's why these are included here. Yes.
The Pushti Marg devotees.
Yeah, they do that. I was thinking of that. But even among them, they have what is called, they have two stages. Something like our Vaidhi and Raga, they also have two stages, Maryada and Pushti. So it's not that a neophyte who comes, he can immediately go to Pushti. He has to follow Maryada. Maryada means he has to follow many rules and regulations. And they say that, but they don't wait for, like in our stage, Raganuga is considered very advanced. But for them, they consider Pushti to be quite early on. If you just practice for a few months or a year or so or something like that, then you can come to Pushti. But still that difference is there. So, actually in the Pushti Marga, most of their written documents come from Vitthalnath. Vitthalnath was the son of Vallabhacharya. Brother or son? Son of Vallabhacharya. So from him most of the documents come. So that's how they practice it. But the principle is that they also, in principle, they have the difference of Maryada and Pushti. But they go to the Pushti level a little too early. And in our Sampradaya also, before Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you know, from the early stage only we would have like Raganuga Sarada Bhajan. But then Bhaktivinoda Thakur saw that it is leading to a lot of Sahajiyaism. So therefore, he put it at a high pedestal. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur emphasized it all the more, and Srila Prabhupada also. But the end result is the same. If we are not qualified for Raganuga Bhakti, but by doing Sadhana Bhakti throughout our life and serving, the mood is essentially of service. We serve the spiritual master, serve Krishna. So if we do that, we get the same result.
in ISKCON, we don't encourage Laddu Gopal and all those things, because
generally, yeah, we don't. If somebody has it, that's okay, but we never install Laddu Gopal. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Actually, if you see from what I know in the Vallabh Sampradaya, they have Pushti as an emotion. But with respect to practice, you know, worshipping the deity, they have a lot of rules.
Actually, even more than our rules, what we follow, they have more rules. We even cannot imagine that much rules they have. Even their home, their temples, I was there from that place. So I feel it's not too early, because they follow rules, regulation like anything. Even, cleanliness point of view. And all these things they follow very strictly, which even we are also not following. And we go to Nathadwara there also. They have very strict rules. We cannot enter any dirty room. Anyone can enter. You cannot enter only. They have to take bath every time. They have to wear fresh clothes. Everything, they have very strict rules.
Okay. Yes. So, last question. We'll move forward.
Will this friendship example given Arjuna? I have not well understood this. Is there any current example of how devotee serves?
Yeah.
I just wanted to ask, just like to clarify.
I don't know. I read one diary of Indradu Maharaj where he had gone to Udupi to take darshan, and then after that he wrote a meeting with a dear friend, and there he had shared his heart with the Udupi deity. So another devotee asked him, you know, how can you consider the deity to be your dear friend? And then he had said this, that is, the friendship is one of the limbs of devotional service. So that's the example that I can think of. Apart from that, in the acharyas, I don't know anyone who has actually done like that. The previous acharyas, I mean. Want to add something?
Prabhupada gives a very valuable purport here for Sakyam. He says Sakyam means being a well-wisher of Krishna.
Achha.
Krishna wants everyone to surrender unto him, because everyone is constitutionally servant. Therefore, as a sincere friend of Krishna, one should preach this philosophy, requesting everyone to surrender to Krishna.
Brilliant. This is that Bhagavatam purport for Sakyam. Oh, very interesting. So we have a sense of fellowship with Krishna. This is Krishna's mission, so this is my mission also. Very interesting. So yes, we'll quickly go through the remaining now.
Actually, the explanation of this mantra and of practically all mantras of the Vedic hymns is summarized in the Vedanta Sutra and properly explained in Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is the mature fruit of the Vedic tree of wisdom. In Srimad Bhagavatam, this particular mantra is explained in the questions and answers between Maharaj Parikshit and Shukadeva Goswami at the very beginning of their meeting. Hearing and chanting of the science of God is a basic principle of devotional service, devotional life. The complete Bhagavatam was heard by Maharaj Parikshit and chanted by Shukadeva Goswami. Maharaj Parikshit inquired from Shukadeva, because Shukadeva was a greater spiritual master than any great yogi or transcendentalist of his time.
So here Prabhupada is talking about how Bhagavatam elaborates on whatever is taught in the Upanishads. And now he will go to the incident in the Bhagavatam which illustrates this particular verse.
Maharaj Parikshit's main question was, what is the duty of every man specifically at the time of death? Shukadeva Goswami answered, Tasmad Bharat Sarvatma Bhagavan Ishvaro Hari Shrotavya Kirtitavyascha Smartavyascha Chatabhayam. Everyone who desires to be free from all anxieties should always hear about, glorify and remember the personality of Godhead, who is the supreme director of everything, the extinguisher of all difficulties and the supersoul of all living entities. Bhagavatam.
So the extinguisher of all difficulties is what? Hari. So Prabhupada is translating Hari as what? Extinguisher. Why extinguisher? Samsara davan lidaloka tranayakarunyaganagana. So extinguishes all difficulties. Yeah.
So-called human society is generally engaged at the night in sleeping and having sex, and during the daytime in earning as much money as possible, or else in shopping for family maintenance.
Yes, just a minute. So now what? We went through these purports. The importance of the last thought. Krishna never forgets our service. Then Krishna's mercy is that same hope. We want Krishna's mercy so that we can remember him. That mercy is available if we practice devotional service throughout our life. Now Prabhupada talks about Bhagavatam, and now through Bhagavatam he exemplifies how Parikshit Maharaj prepared and how we can prepare for the last one. Yeah.
People have very little time to talk about the personality of Godhead or to inquire about him. They have dismissed God's existence in so many ways, primarily by declaring him to be impersonal, that is, without sense perception.
Yes, so Prabhupada is considering they dismissed God's existence, not by propagating atheism, but by propagating impersonalism. Because what happens in impersonalism, there is no accountability. If there is a person, then I have to be accountable to that person. There is only Brahman to whom am I accountable. So the relationship and the commitment that a relationship demands is very much there in bhakti. Now what we talk about vyavaharik and paramarthik, most of today the impersonal don't even talk about that. They just say, oh, God is impersonal, then God doesn't have emotions, God doesn't have sentience. So then whatever we do, it's fine. So they dismiss God's existence primarily by declaring him to be impersonal.
But in the Vedic literature, whether the Upanishads, Vedanta Sutra, Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, it is declared that the Lord is a sentient being and is supreme over all other living entities. His glorious activities are identical with himself. One should therefore not indulge in hearing and speaking of the rubbish activities of worldly politicians and so-called big men in society, but should mold his life in such a way that he can engage in godly activities without wasting a second. Sri Ishopanishad directs us toward such godly activities. Unless one is accustomed to devotional practice, what will he remember at the time of death, when the body is dislocated, and how can he pray at the Almighty Lord to remember for his sacrifices? Sacrifice means denying the interest of the senses.
Very important. Sacrifice means denying the interest of the senses. So, people may think sacrifice means doing some yajna. Yeah, but what are the principle of yajna? You offer ahuti. And what is the ahuti? If you see, generally it's grains, it's ghee, and it's silk. These three things and some other ingredients are there. Now, all these three are very palatable for the senses. Ghee, food, and silk and clothes. So, even in that yajna, the essential principle is not just to put something into fire to let it be burnt. The fire is considered the mouth of Vishnu. So, from there, in the Rigveda, it says, Vishnu vai devanam paramo, vayur agnir amo tadantara sarva devata. That means, among all the devatas, Vishnu is supreme and Agni is the lowest. And tadantara sarva devata, in between. So when you say Agni is the lowest, that doesn't mean in terms of prowess, it means in terms of accessibility, Agni is the most accessible to us. So, Agni is the medium by which our sacrifices go to all the gods. That's why when we offer things into the yajna, it's not just a waste. It's actually the means by which we go give to the Lord. But the principle there also is what? What could have been palatable to our senses, we deny the interest of our senses and offer it to the Lord. So same way, sacrifice in general means to deny the interest of the senses. That's why in the 4th chapter, Krishna gives so many different kinds of sacrifice. Dravyamaya yajna, tapomaya yajna. In all of them, underlying spirit is to give up the interest of the senses. Yeah.
One has to learn this art by employing the senses in the service of the Lord during one's lifetime. One can utilize the results of such practice at the time of death.
Yes. Throughout our life, we try to glorify Krishna. And when we glorify Krishna, then we'll be able to remember, call out to Krishna at the time of death. And then we can return back home, back to Godhead. Shri Shobh Nishad ki... Srila Prabhupada ki Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki Jai.